This is Fresh Air. Here's a chilling statistic for you. Over the last 2 years, guns killed almost 70,000 Americans, more than the total of U.S. soldiers killed in the entire Vietnam War. This comes from the new book, Lethal Passage, about the gun crisis in America. We spoke with author Eric Larson in January. We thought you'd also be interested in hearing from someone who has dedicated his life to opposing gun control. Neil Knox is the former head of the National Rifle Association's political and lobbying arm. He's on the board of the NRA, and since 1984 has run his own lobby group, the Firearms Coalition, in a suburb of Washington. In the Wall Street Journal, Larson described Knox as the NRA's spiritual master and said he's likely to have a greater impact on the fight over gun control than any other individual in America. Knox says gun control isn't the solution to crime because no gun law has succeeded in keeping guns out of the hands of criminals. But I pointed out that his group works against the passage of any gun control law with teeth.
We have been working against it because in the laboratory that is the states and the various gun laws that have been passed, we should be able to identify the kind of laws that have a positive effect in controlling crime. In fact, not one gun law can be identified as having had the stated desired result. The reason is that criminals pay no more attention to gun laws than they do the laws against rape, robbery, and murder. The only ones who obey the law are the law-abiding citizens. They're not the problem. But by disarming the citizen when the criminal is not disarmed, we have created a situation where the criminal has the advantage. Even if he didn't have a gun, he would have the advantage. A woman alone trying to raise her child is absolutely a victim to any strong man that decides that he's going to do anything he wants to with her.
Attorney General Janet Reno and many other people have said, we have to make sure it's at least as difficult to get a gun as it is to get a driver's license. Do you object to that?
I do. There is no constitutional right to drive a car. There is a constitutional right to keep and bear arms.
So that's it?
Well, I think that is enough said right there. There's all the difference in the world.
Well, but you do not let me follow up on that. You have said that the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms, is the most important amendment in the Bill of Rights.
I didn't say it was the most important. What I said was that it is the amendment that is in the Bill of Rights that gives muscle to the rest of the Bill of Rights. We have some wonderful words in the constitutions of various dictatorships, even in the constitution of the former Soviet Republic, had wonderful words about personal freedoms, and they meant nothing because the people were denied the means to protect themselves against an oppressive government. Stalin killed millions of people, and he had nothing to prevent him from doing it because only the crooks and the police had the guns.
So are you saying that the best way of stopping crime now is for citizens to arm themselves to protect themselves?
I'm not saying that's the best way. In fact, I find it appalling that we would have to even think in those terms. But since we live in a world where the criminals are armed, the criminals do not care about human life, either their own or other people, the people need to have the means to defend themselves. It astonishes me that the government, which admits that it cannot protect the people and is not under requirement, under law, to protect the people, only as society as a whole, not as an individual citizen. Since they can't protect me and they can't protect you, what business is it of such a government to say that we're going to deny you the means to defend yourself?
Do you use a gun for self-defense?
Thank goodness, I never have.
But do you carry one for self-defense?
No, I cannot because of the laws of Maryland and here in the District of Columbia. I cannot carry a gun because the laws disarm me, but I assure you that the criminals are carrying guns here. I have seen it by people that one night, I was not too many blocks from where we are, where I am right now, when a fellow stepped out of the shadows, I could see the gun in his rather thin pants. It was summer night. I could identify even the type of gun. There were three of us, and we stared him down. He decided to not do anything, but we were defenseless unless we could out-wrestle him, because he had a gun. He was a criminal. But the law-abiding citizen is disarmed. If you take a gun away from a criminal, he is still a criminal. You take a gun away from a law-abiding citizen, and he is a potential victim. Or she.
What would you carry if you could?
Oh, I would carry probably a relatively small gun so I wouldn't embarrass myself or my neighbors by rudely displaying the gun. I don't like the idea of doing this. More important than what I would carry, I think, is what a woman would carry, how she would carry it.
What would you recommend for me?
I would recommend for a woman a revolver, a 5 or 6 shot small frame revolver, mainly because the gun is capable of handling any type of ammunition without misfunctioning or malfunctioning. It is a very safe gun in the sense that it is not cocked. You have to roll a hammer back or pull the trigger, which requires a considerable effort. I find that that type of gun is probably the best for a woman to carry, and it has interested me to see how many women are beginning to obtain guns. I think it's probably the result of the fact that we have so many single women now who are not under the, quote, watchful care of a husband. Now they are depending upon themselves. They must depend upon themselves to protect themselves and their families. And so they are interested in the greater security, which does come as a result of having a firearm with which to defend themselves.
One of the paradoxes here, I think, is that, I think more law-abiding citizens want to carry guns because so many criminals are carrying guns, and it's becoming so dangerous in the streets and dangerous at home and dangerous in the schools. Now, so a lot of people would argue that the reason why law-abiding citizens want to carry guns is because there aren't enough laws to prevent the criminals from carrying guns.
Oh, on the contrary.
And so if we prevented the criminals from carrying guns, the rest of us wouldn't have to worry about being armed.
It's already against the law for that criminal to carry a gun, against the law for him to possess a gun. Now,
but
see, the criminal is a criminal whether or not he's got a gun, and he is a danger to the community whether or not he has a gun. You, as a woman, are defenseless when you are faced with a large, hulking criminal. I don't care if he's armed with nothing but a pocket knife or only his fist. He's much more powerful than you are. And I say that you should have the right to be able to defend yourself. That is what the Second Amendment was intended to do, to provide protection for the individual, for the community that he lived in, and protection of his family. This is closer to the Second Amendment intent that the Founding Fathers had in mind, the idea of protection, because in those days there wasn't so much recreational shooting. As a man, my use of a firearm is primarily recreational. Of course, having a gun for self-defense is not a bit of fun. That's not sport. But at the same time, my recreation is not the reason that the Second Amendment is there. There's a bumper sticker that says that the Second Amendment ain't about duck hunting. This idea of a sporting purpose is nonsense. The Second Amendment is about personal defense and defense of community.
My guest is Neil Knox. He's on the board of the NRA and is the head of the Firearms Coalition. More after this break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Neil Knox, founder of the gun lobby group, the Firearms Coalition. How old were you when you got your first gun, and what was it?
At Christmas, when I was 9 years old, my dad gave me a .22 rifle. It was, of course, some years before I was able to take it out on my own. That was after a lot of training. But my wife also got her first gun when she was 9, the Christmas when she was 9. That's not unusual, But we were trained in both respect for the gun and respect for law. The problem we have today is people who are not trained in respect for either.
When you became more politicized in relation to guns, did the kind of guns you owned or the way you used the guns you owned change at all?
Not really, not mine. But in the case of, I shouldn't say not really as far as the guns I used, but the guns I owned did, I did buy the kind of gun that was more useful for self-defense when my wife, after we had been married about a year, I gave her a little 38 special Smith & Wesson as Mother's Day present, and at the time we had one child. But it was for the purpose of providing her the means of a small gun with which she could defend herself.
Has she ever had to use it?
She has come very close. She had some very serious experiences where she came close to having to display the gun, or maybe more. She never has used it. Both of my daughters, however, who I have given them guns as they, after training when they grew up, both of my daughters have been in a situation where the gun did perhaps save them from injury, rape, or death.
Can you tell us about one of those instances?
Well, one night my daughter that lived here was in a was alone with her two boys, and she was being stalked. And the police said, oh, you don't have to worry about that. They very seldom do anything, but unfortunately my daughter knew better. She had a very good friend who was also stalked and had received a bunch of telephone calls and who wound up being killed by somebody that broke in the middle of the night. So my daughter was petrified, and she had the gun to defend herself, and this guy, apparently the same one, who broke in more than once into the house. One time he broke in, she heard him downstairs, and she informed him that she had a gun, and she intended to use it. He left. Now, if she had not had a gun, where would she have been? You think about the movie, that many movies we've made, like Dial M for Murder. There would be no plot. There would be nothing to write about if the woman, alone, helpless, had a means of defending herself.
I'm glad you brought up movies. I want to ask you about movies and television. As you know, there are a lot of people who would like to get Hollywood and the television industry to tone down violence and the use of guns in movies and TV shows. What do you think of that?
Well, I have mixed emotions. We do have a First Amendment, but I'm also aware that much of the criminal craving for firearms, if I can call it that, is spurred by the news media, or not the news media, the television media showing these exotic-looking guns, and they spray around and they show how tough the person is, and it causes some people that aren't quite, they don't have both oars in the water, that causes some of those people to want to emulate what they see on television. We know from 150 studies that violence on television does lead to violent behavior of kids. If you can sell soap on television, you can sell violence. And I'm afraid that's what's been going on here.
So you'd rather see some kind of restriction placed on the use of guns in TV and film than try to restrict criminals' access to guns?
I would like to. Well, first of all, bear in mind that access is already restricted.
Now that there's the Brady Bill, there's a criminal check.
No,
on people
there buying. Has been since 1985 or 1968. They talk about Sarah Brady said we've got to take guns out of the hands of drug dealers. Now you think about that. That's a ludicrous statement. A 16-year-old kid waving around a gun already has a 5-year waiting period. He has had that since 1968. But that didn't prevent it, did it? See, the people who call for more gun laws very, very seldom know the laws that are on the books.
Well, I want to thank you for talking with us.
Terry, it's been my pleasure.
Neil Knox is on the board of the NRA and is the executive director of the gun lobby group, the Firearms Coalition. This is Fresh Air.